If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Headstuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
Do art and technology really mix?
Can a robot be the next Picasso?
Will I get to see John Lennon live in the metaverse?
This is For Tech's Sake, a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Headstuff Podcast Network. We're your hosts, Jenny Darmody
and Elaine Burke. And today on our technology podcast, we're going to talk about art. And normally you have to argue for that placement of arts alongside technology, but I think we're at a cultural moment where people really understand the linkage between the two, maybe more than they've ever considered before, because AI.
Yeah. Yes, everything. Everything because AI. But yes, it's true. There's a lot of talk about AI in general and generative AI, about how tech and art intersect and how they should intersect. And there's some really, really big questions there that have to be answered.
Yeah, like questions that actually challenge the thinking of the nature of creativity. It does really feel like we're kind of at a tipping point with this stuff that's going on, essentially.
And we should say up top that we're here for the combo. Arts and tech do go together in lots of ways, and each can serve the other in different ways. And that's why there's a whole movement for putting the A in STEM, making steam.
Choo-choo! Steam engine.
I got it. It's a choo-choo. We're on board that choo-choo train. And we have even used AI for this podcast. I am, in fact, an AI. No, I'm not. I'm kidding.
AI Jenny.
No, but we have used, it's not for the podcast you're listening to per se. We are here recording ourselves. We are humans. But our logo, which you see across all of our platforms and where you can find us, that was designed with the help of DALL-E.
Yeah, and it wasn't even our idea. It was Matt Madden, who works here at Headstuff, and he suggested it because he as a designer, he thought it would be good to include a fairly new technology at the time. Mm. Like, it's one of the early releases of DALL-E that he used to create and manipulate an image that was for a tech podcast. And we were really happy with that idea because it does speak to that spirit of collaborative AI, which we're pretty okay with.
Yeah, and because tech is essentially a tool, and it's how you use the tools that counts at the end of the day. And if an artist wants to use AI or other technologies in their work, like, we shouldn't stop them.
Well,
maybe.
Narrowly are you defining artist? And how broadly do you want to see AI get involved?
Yeah, okay. We're getting into the weeds a little bit here. That makes sense. So, yeah, there's a lot of kind of thoughts about that and, like, you know, artist infringement and, you know, figuring out how much you're cutting out humans and things like that. And, you know, whether or not you're getting rid of the work of artists, say, like, things that we don't know about, like stock image creation and stock music and things like that. There's issue with copyright and other such things. So, yeah, there's a lot to talk about here in terms of, like, what is considered artistic work and how much of it is created by human, how much of it is created AI. Does it then tip over into a world where that wasn't really created by an artist? So there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, and even asking, what is art?
Yeah.
Which is a question that I think will never, forever be unanswered. But we can take some real life examples of AI in the world of the arts because we have them, and we can weigh them up with the good and the bad because that's what we do here. So say an artist uses AI to create a submission for an art competition. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, so this actually did come up.
This has happened a few times.
Yeah, this has come up, and the AI generated art has won. And that has caused massive controversy. So
in both cases, it wasn't disclosed. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah.
In the art competition and in the photography competition.
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so. Because with the photography one in particular, because
he was trying to make a statement.
Yeah, because it was tricking the judges. So I think that kind of comes down to my thoughts on it, which is like transparency is a huge issue here. So I think you can't stop AI from being used. And like the example we just said, if artists choose to use tech and AI in their creation of images, and that's still a form of artistry, I think that should be addressed. But maybe there's limitations that need to be considered, or like level of work. I don't know how that exactly could be measured or policed. It would be arbitrary potentially, which is another issue in itself. But, you know, there's ways in which, you know, there could be competitions where, you know, it's AI generated art that, like, you know, is an actual category itself and things like that. So I think there's ways that needs to be addressed. But the transparency, like artists having to, you know, state how they used AI, how much it was used and why, you know, I think there's an argument to be made of whether or not there was value to add AI to this. Like there was a reason AI was put into this particular piece of art. So there's probably some parameters that need to be developed over time.
Yeah, which I suppose competitions have had to do over time as well. So what about non-artists, like businesses, non-creators who used to hire people or professional services to create or license artworks? What if they start making those works themselves using AI and then they stop paying the people that they used to pay for it? Because this is a huge microeconomy in many cases. Like you mentioned about the kind of stock imagery, stock music and stuff like that. But even something as small, and maybe we think of it as inconsequent, as YouTube thumbnails. Like that's a whole big microeconomy for people. Yeah. Mr. Beast, who's a massive YouTuber, he reportedly tests up to 20 variations of YouTube thumbnails just to see like what's going to garner the biggest audience, what's going to get the most clicks. And he has reportedly paid up to $10,000 for one thumbnail.
Oh my God.
Some video creators pay hundreds of dollars. Some will pay far less, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But like that's a lot of work that's currently paid work, but that could be displaced because there's AI is now being created to displace them, essentially.
Yeah, and it is a forgotten jobs economy, I think, because there are creators behind stock images and stock music and free-to-use Creative Commons licenses type music and media and things like that. And I actually, when generative AI sort of exploded over the last year, there was talk around, you know, infringing on artistry and, you know, the cultural things that we all are more aware of. And a pro, inverted commas, was made about, you know, how it, well, like, you know, we're not talking about, you know, creating artificial music that, like, you know, are displacing actual artists. We're just talking about creating that stuff that's like free and nobody like cares about and like it's not hurting anyone. And that's when that kind of microeconomy of people be like, hello, yes, I get paid to make that stuff. And if you just start filling elevators, for example, and other places where there's like proper music that's non-licensed, that's paid work that's getting displaced. So that is a huge issue and something that like needs to be addressed.
There's so much of that invisible work that we don't really account for. And then I suppose that's maybe why people build tools that are like, oh yeah, no, there's no person behind that. That's just a thing that happens. But let's get to the root of it. All of this generative AI that we're mentioning is most likely trained on artistic works without permission or consent. How do we feel about that?
Not great.
It's not great, Bob.
Not great. So this has been an issue coming up in the last couple of months as well, particularly writers, authors. The Authors Guild of America like wrote a letter and have been trying to sue OpenAI, essentially. Big names, Margaret Atwood, Jodi Picoult, and etc., are on the letter basically saying, you know, our writing is being ripped off on the internet and being used to train these models without our permission. One name I noted that was massively ripped off on the AI generators is Stephen King, who, my hero, but has a slightly different view of it, like a little bit more relaxed. He's not for it ripping off his stuff, but he does believe that creativity requires sentience. So he's kind of to a level not super, super worried about it. And also is like, even if I could stop it, I wouldn't be able to stop it even if I could, but also I don't think I'd bother because there's only so much that you
kind
can
of
do.
Kind of feeling threatened by it.
Yeah, and I think the sentience argument is a really important one in the art industry. It's something that we all have to like hold on to in terms of, you know.
And I suppose like Stephen King being Stephen King probably has loads of poor imitators that aren't AIs, yeah, that haven't toppled him to this day.
Like, he's also
still Stephen King.
He also famously hates a lot of the movie creations that come out of that are based on his books.
I like how salty and honest he is about that stuff.
Yeah. Big fan.
Yeah. AI songwriting. Nick Cave called it a grotesque mockery of what it is to be human. Okay, like, I mean, it's not great, I agree, but that's harsh. I don't disagree with Nick Cave. Like, it is rubbish from what I've seen. I haven't seen good AI songwriting that was completely done by an AI with no human input involved. But I am getting shades of the, that's not real music kind of argument here from music bros. Like, that kind of experimentation with, like, electronica and even hyperpop and stuff like that, you see artists like Grimes embracing AI. There's a lot of great creators in that arena who happen to be not men with guitars. And a lot of the anti-side is exactly that. You've got Sting, Ed Sheeran, Nick Cave, Hozier, guitar lads and guitar dads. But Ed Sheeran uses loops.
Yeah.
Like, that's just using tech in creative ways, doing something solo that he shouldn't be able to do. Like, why are you drawing this line against other people using technology?
Because when he does it, it's fine.
Because he's a guitar man.
It's a guitar lad. Yeah, but that is interesting because the Grimes thing, Vocaloid situation that she had, which is basically she invited others to create songs using her voice, offered to split the royalties on any AI-generated track that saw commercial success. And TuneCore helps Grimes monitor the use of her AI voice. And Kits.ai is a company that helps other people generate AI voices based on their own and license it. So tools in the hands of the creator with compensation. I mean, can we really give out about that?
I think that sounds like a cool use of this stuff. Like, if it's kind of like the Stephen King, it's going to happen anyway. Maybe I can do it in a way that will actually serve me as a creator. Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah.
But speaking of the guitar dads, Paul McCartney is caught in controversy with headlines about his use of AI to revive John Lennon's voice for a new Beatles release. Now, when you read beyond the headlines, which were very salacious indeed, it sounds like what they're actually doing is audio refinement.
Yeah.
So this is as much a work of conservation or preservation than it is like recreating John Lennon's voice and bringing it back from the grave or anything like that. I don't think it's as macabre as it's been made out to be in some circles. And the way McCartney put it is, nothing has been artificially or synthetically created. It's all real and we play on it, being the record. We cleaned up some existing recordings, a process which has gone on for years. Like, this, it's refinement. It's something that we do all the time with audio these days.
Yeah, and I think you're right about the headline stuff, because I remember reading it, and the one I saw, the particular text I saw, was Paul McCartney says there's nothing artificial in new Beatles song made using AI. And immediately I was got by it. I was thinking, how you liar? How is it not artificially created if it was using AI?
And then it isn't the word, it's artificial intelligence, Paul.
And then I read it and calmed sufficiently down. Because what's interesting about this one is we don't know much about the song because he's kind of keeping that under wraps. But if rumors are to be believed, it could be a recording of John Lennon from a cassette tape that he made literally for Paul. I'm pretty sure that's what is said on the cassette tape. That Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, gave to the remaining Beatle members at the time. I think two of those songs have been
They were able to do two of them, but this one was particularly poor recording quality. They couldn't use it at the time.
Yeah,
so two of them were released already.
The rumors are thought to be that this could be the extra song, which, based on the express wishes of the cassette tape that John recorded and his widow giving it over to the Beatles and the Beatles then doing this, I don't see the exploitation here. So I think that he's correct. It is not.
Yeah.
It's not synthetic, it's his voice, it is conservation.
So I don't think we're going to get John Lennon in the metaverse, but...
No.
We do have AI pop stars.
Yes.
They're very metaverse-y.
Yeah.
So Nunuri, I have no idea if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but if you look up Nunuri, this is an AI pop star that's basically a coquettish, Lolita-esque kind of creation. It's not the first avatar influencer to pivot into pop music, would you believe? That's the age that we live in.
Says
but
a lot.
Its creator, her creator, I'm not sure what pronouns we're using here, is a man who donned a mocap suit to program in her motions. And like, this is a strange one, all right. I also question here, calling this an AI pop star. Like, AI is essentially a marketing term now.
Mm.
This is as much animation as it is AI. Because mocapture and stuff like that, that's used, to give you your golems and stuff.
Yeah, or your video games.
Yeah. like she's just a puppet, like a weird sock this guy puts on via mocap to play out a pop star fantasy. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, and like this is where I think it comes back to transparency a bit. Like, you know, if we know what it is and it's not pretending to be anything like a Nick Cave dupe, it's not for me personally, and it does give me a bit of squee feelings for other reasons, but I think it's a totally different area of like, you know, plagiarizing music or taking away from artistry. It's just kind of a different thing. Like, here's something else we can do.
Yeah. Some people may be into it, some may not.
Yeah.
And then the voices and the AIs and stuff like that, like sometimes they're individuals or a small set of people's voices that have been manipulated. Completely synthesized voices are available, but in the ones that you may have heard of, that's not normally the case. So again, I'm like, how much of this really is an AI pop star? Like, there's a band called Eternity that's a virtual K-pop group. And that's the thing, I'm going to start using the term virtual here because calling them AI is giving them too much credit. They have a music video with real people performing with AI swapped faces, so the generated faces are plonked onto a real dancer, and it's an 11 strong group, and you'll see that the only diversity factor in this group is blonde or brunette. In 11 faces, like, that's the only differences I could see.
Yeah, I feel like this will come into a question of like what is considered true artistry, or in my personal opinion, because I think that true artistry is a bit exclusionary, and it harks back to the music bros of like, it's not real music. Mm-hmm. But I think it'll be just something that's kind of considered its own genre.
Yeah.
Like its own total, it's carving out its own little space, like not better, not to be compared, not the same as just, oh, here's something else.
Yeah. And maybe not for you, the way speed metal is not for everyone.
Yeah.
But it has its own fan groups. Like, and there's pros to this because it could stop that exploitative K-pop industry, which gets its hooks into these performers very young, closes them off, and it's like a Big Brother style house. They have to have a perfected image. A lot of them are, you know, coerced into cosmetic procedures and stuff like that. Like, it's really shady stuff. But if you're the actor being the body instead with like an AI face in you, you could actually live your life unruffled by the fame, but you're probably not going to make those K-pop dollars either because you're not actually the face.
Yeah, which it does come into the weeding out of exploitation in areas that already exist.
And just the let's pay workers less element of it all.
Yeah, it still raises those questions around being transparent and also fair use and also fair pay.
Yeah, and Maeve, they're another animated virtual K-pop group. They're kind of made for the metaverse, essentially.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's hard to imagine that. Like, it was strange when I first heard of them, but then I was like, well, Gorillaz exists and they're a band that I really like and they're literally a cartoon band. And go even further back, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah.
Like, I was a big fan.
Yeah.
Alvin and the Chipmunks before all the like CGI films, like way back in the cartoon days. Is it really that strange?
Yeah. And the Gorillaz are from the 90s at the end of the day. So like,
this is old.
Yeah.
This is old hat. New hat. But there is the aspect of control that I do find unsettling. And especially someone who grew up in the Britney era.
Mm.
It's like we said, stop trying to control young women, please. And they said, okay, we'll just create young women that we can control and they will never betray us or sue us or try to end our conservative shifts or dance with knives. Thanks. I hate it.
Yeah. This is why it made me feel squee. This is the squee feeling I meant. Like, it's not because of the artist part per se. It's just like, oh, I think it's because it's the man in the mocap creating the...
It's weird.
Female.
It's a little bit weird.
Yeah, it's just giving me vibes. I'm just like, I don't think I'm here for it.
And not that reasons. I have anything against a guy like doing performative work as a female avatar. It was just more that this particular female avatar is designed to be quite young permanently. And there was just this vibe that I found gross. Because it is kind of fulfilling a marketing team's dreams at the end of the day. Like, Eternity has a lead singer, Jane, I think it's pronounced, and she has the talents of many people because she is many people. They just plonk her face on people with different skills. So they have a video of her like wakeboarding, and that's because like they got someone who could wakeboard and just planted her face on it. And then it's taught that these fans can turn the avatars into virtual companions. So kind of going down that route. So that could be a marketing route. Like, you could actually be, in a sort of relationship with your pop star dream. And like, I know we all dreamed that as kids, but I'm not sure how healthy it is for us to actually be able to go down that route in future.
Yeah, we're getting into the weird AI thing again.
Yeah. And then again, like, what is AI? The songs are sometimes composed using AI, but humans are typically involved in some degree, even if it's just editing some AI outputs. Like, I do think it will be a more assistive AI future, like with autotune, which was first railed against and then we all accept it.
Yeah, that's true. And you can do some interesting and creative stuff with AI, as we've already mentioned, and you can also do some problematic stuff. So, for example, BTS's management company apparently used AI to tweak one of the guy's pronunciation. So, you know, racist.
That's a bit racist.
And pitch, which, okay, fine.
That's more auto-tuney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then released the song into 6 languages. So that's quite interesting.
Yeah, in one fell swoop, they did some problematic and pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
With that stuff.
Just one job, yeah.
Yeah. There's a rapper-generated, a virtual rapper called FN Mika, and the story behind that is wild.
Okay.
It's hard to explain because there's a lot of things I don't know about the story that like have a kind of he said she said vibe to it. But essentially, this like very stereotypical rapper creation apparently had no black people involved in creating it, even though it's a black character. Now they've claimed that there is black people involved in the creative team, but have not been able to produce any of them to comment on the record about it. So it's a bit, so yeah, like black activist groups in the States came out against this and said this is a horrible caricature. And then I was getting really caught up then to think of like in the lyrics of the songs, they were using words that some black rappers may use freely, mm-hmm. but I would personally never use.
Yeah.
And like the ethics of a team of white people putting those words into a black avatar's mouth is
yeah
it makes me itch.
Oh, I don't like that at all. That's yeah.
a really cagey one.
Yeah,
like, I mean, if we really don't go down the route of the AI agents doing the job of creating art, like if it was actually AI musicians, AI artists, because none of this is, I don't think.
Yeah,
what would that mean for the diversity of choice and discovery? Because the algorithm, as we know, gives us more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. Mm-hmm. Algorithmically generated entities are just more of the same. So yeah. How do you possibly get a breakout weirdo like a Bowie or a Bjork out of that scenario?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say, again, trying to be optimistic here, it could heighten the true breakout artists and weirdos even further.
Yeah, because Bjork is an artist who uses technology to amazing effect.
Yeah, but also to Stephen King's point about true creativity requiring sentience, even mass-produced, sentiently created, yes, I'm making it a word, let's roll with it, has proven to produce very similar stuff from movies to TVs to like, oh, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. We've seen so much of that. And none of that is to do with AI. All of that is to do with humans and marketing and trends.
Capitalism.
To be like, yeah, more of this. Do you want more of this samey crap? Or do you want more unrequested remakes that nobody wanted ever? Mm. So like, I think then in the midst of all that mass-produced crap that has nothing to do with AI, you get some truly great, amazing stuff that then not only is still created, but we are all like, oh my God, finally, thank you, something original. And we loud it even more. Now, it's still harder for those things to get produced. And sure, the big money goes to the samey crap, but that's a capitalism problem, not an AI problem.
That sounds like a capitalism problem. I think we're kind of falling into the Stephen King camp of maybe there's not a real concern for creative practice because the fact that it requires something inherently human to be good protects it in some way. I find a great example of this is AI knits. So like people used AI to generate knitting patterns and then knitted those things. And they're adorable, but they're freakish as well. Like they make no sense. So there's an element of creativity, but they're also not quite correct. And there's lots of fun being had there, but like maybe they're not going to be something that anyone would have set out to make. They are cool in a way, but a human being has to be involved to even do the interpretation of why this is kind of wrong and funky. There's so many layers to it. But like AI can definitely produce things. That's fact, whether it's artwork, graphic, music, speeches, faces, portraits, characters, scripts, whatever. But just because it can make art doesn't mean it can make good art.
Yeah, there's a lot of focus on productivity and being able to do the thing. But like, is it a good thing that you're doing or is it just churn? And how much of the motivation is commercial?
Yeah, a lot of the motivation is commercial, I think. Like, it's essentially a debate on the creative process, which is like itself, that arguably derives from any number of sources. So an artist's influences are filtered through that artist or creator's lens and you get art. Like they've taken things from all sorts of sources, all sort of influences. But rather than sweat the details of that, the bigger picture is the people power. And if you don't have an audience or an appetite for this content, then what's the problem? Like, you know, the Stephen King dupes.
Yeah.
Like he still is the one being Stephen King and, and making all the good money there. And the good news is that even though it might be the dream of record execs, marketers and people in commerce trying to be cheap and not pay workers, it's not necessarily what consumers want. Like, there's plenty of K-pop and other art form fans that are not interested in this stuff.
Yeah, and actually the founder of Creator Economy newsletter, Creator Logic, proposed that human made as a label is going to become like a marker of quality of digital goods, the same way some of us might pay premium on a label that says handmade or handcrafted or even like locally produced. Like, that's going to be another thing that's like, this was 100% created by a human.
Yeah, that's a really nice thought, I think. And like, people, I think in the main, have shown that they're willing to pay artists and creators.
Yeah.
Not when they become commercial intermediaries, but like, as individuals, we've kind of shown that we will pay those kind of premiums for like handcrafted, handmade stuff. But those commercial intermediaries, they want to make the money. And there isn't a good precedent, I don't think, for tech paying out for artistry. Like, when music streaming obliterated record companies' business models, the backlash becomes Spotify, the major platform for music consumption, paying artists a pittance, which is best illustrated in the Eurovision entry about Edgar Allan Poe, where they sing, they mostly sing Poe, 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 Poe. But there's a part in that song where the song is actually about this issue, and they sing the word 0.003 because that's the royalty payment you get for a stream on Spotify. Not even a full cent, 0.003 of that cent.
Excellent. What a great Eurovision reference. I'm so happy for you. So we've gotten very arty and philosophical up here and very carried away, if I'm honest.
Yeah, this is a very long discussion.
So I think it's time to bring in today's expert so that we can stop rabbiting on. We're going to speak about these topics and much more with Aisling Murray, an experienced curator and creative producer who recently launched Beta, an all-new international arts and technology festival that will be hosted in the Digital Hub in Dublin in November 2023. Welcome, Aisling. What are your thoughts on all of the above that we just said?
Oh my God, so much. I agree with a lot of what you were talking about there. And actually, I hadn't realised about your logo at all. That's super interesting. And the really funny thing is, actually, the logo for Beta was also created using AI, but actually just before the wave of generative AI kind of really hit in the past year. So it was a designer called Leon Butler that I worked with. And he kind of old school, I suppose, in a way, created this machine learning algorithm and pulls different alphabets to create this font for Beta. And when he sent me the first version, it looked really beautiful. And I was like, oh, can we not lean a little bit more into the kind of weird, uncanny nature of this? And he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd accidentally pulled out, you know, all of the ugly looking ones because he's a designer and he wanted it to look good. And actually, we're like, no, we want it to look weird and we want to pull out that weirdness in the AI. So we corrupted the data set with like old Irish alphabet, old Greek alphabet to kind of lean into these weirdisms. And so actually, if you look at the logo, it looks really imperfect. And it's so funny because when I sent it to some designer friends, they were like, oh, people are just going to think it's wrong. You know, it doesn't look right because like there's lots of things not right about it. But that's kind of what I love most about it, is that it's used this really like, you know, future facing AI technology. And actually, it's really imperfect. And so exactly to that point around, in the future, would you have these things that say, actually, this is human made, where you kind of have this stamp of approval on it?
Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah.
And let's get into it. Tell us about Beta, what it's all about. What can people expect? Why should they come? What will they experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So Beta is a new festival of art and technology. And it's, I suppose, one of the big aims with this is to critically engage with technology's impact on society. So I was kind of inspired by things like looking at the National Artificial Intelligence Strategy, looking at plans for the digital transformation, and really looking at some of these conversations from local to global. So looking at, you know, the conversations that were happening nationally, but then all the way up to things like the new European Bauhaus and the EU AI Act. And I suppose there's a lot of really interesting things happening in industry and in academia. And I know you've spoken with Patricia Scanlon as well, who's amazing, the AI ambassador, and it's so cool that we have her. But really, I was like, okay, how can there be more opportunity for public engagement and for the general public to understand more about the ideas and have access to these ideas and technologies? And that's something I'm really passionate about, is audience-centered programming. So kind of how people can go to creative and cultural events and end up leaving learning a little bit more about the world around them, or being equipped tools to engage more with the world around them. So I suppose it's essentially programming that's underpinned by tech and digital literacy. So that's one big part of the festival. And, you know, through that, looking at multiple access points for people of different events and activities. And then the other piece really is to really shine a spotlight on the community of artists and researchers in Ireland that are working in this area. And that's, I previously worked in an institution called Science Gallery, which is amazing. And there's science galleries all over the world now. Science Gallery Dublin was the first. And really while there, I suppose it was kind of looking at bringing art and science together, or art, science, technology together. And there's a lot of really amazing institutions and festivals internationally that critically engage with technology. And, you know, in Ireland, we have a lot of the big tech companies based here, an increasing number of data centres. And so I really think there's an opportunity for us to showcase the community of people that are actively engaged in these things here and put a spotlight on it. So it's not a case of kind of barging in and being like, this is a brand new thing. Yes, it is a new thing, but actually it's, I suppose, giving a platform nationally and internationally to the researchers and artists that are engaged in art and technology in Ireland. So I guess logistically, it'll be 3 days in November. So opening on the 2nd and running the 3rd, 4th and 5th, the first weekend in November. And it's primarily going to take place up at the Digital Hub. So the Digital Hub are co-founding the festival, which is amazing. And they're really, I can't speak highly of them enough. First of all, it's so nice to not be working at my kitchen table and have a lovely community of like artists and researchers and different companies to engage with on a daily basis. But they've made a 5-year commitment to the festival, which is incredible because it means that, you know, we're starting small this year. It's a boutique version, it's proof of concept. And it's, you know, from there, we kind of look how to grow it and kind of also just show what is resonating with audiences. So it'll primarily take place in the Digital Hub campus with a conference in the bank space up there, an exhibition in the Digital Depot. But then we also have some offsite exhibition in NCAD Gallery, in Palace Studios, with some performance, a dance performance in a Project Art Centre, and a nighttime program in Taylor's Hall, actually. So all kind of like largely up around Dublin 8. And the nighttime program is also being sponsored by Rowan Co, which is great. And they're commissioning an artist as well to place augmented reality sculptures around Dublin 8. Because I suppose this is the thing in thinking about an art and technology festival is, you know, what are the exciting or different things you can do? Like obviously using technology opens up loads of different access points in terms of hybridity as well. But we were like, actually, what are the things that we could do to drive people to locations geographically? So placing these augmented reality sculptures around Dublin 8 is going to hopefully drive people to different locations in the area as well.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. And you talk there about, like, you know, that kind of marriage, I suppose, of like the art and science and technology. So how do you see tech being able to expand and evolve the artistic medium and vice versa?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that technology really is a tool in terms of creativity in the arts, you know, and I know you were mentioning some of the examples within music. I think a really good example is there's this musician called Holly Herndon, who has created Holly Plus. And actually Martin Clancy, who's an Irish researcher, has written an incredible book that touches on this called Music and AI, which is a great read. But Holly Herndon has created the Holly Plus, which she calls it spawning. And it's essentially where you can use her voice and create different songs using her voice. So you could have, you know, a Shannon singer in Ireland use the Holly Plus, and it's essentially singing in Holly's voice, but in the, so she would never be able to achieve that herself. So I think the way in which technology can enable people to push the boundaries of the way that they create work, you know, and really thinking of it in a tool in that way, you know, there was also I forget the name now, but there was a rapper in the US that through Nokia Bell Labs, their experimental art and technology program. Do you know the name?
He was at InspireFest.
Was he? Yeah.
Yeah. I cannot think of his name. No, he's was he the beatboxer?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And so we'll get his name and we'll put it in the show notes, but it's escaping me right now.
Yeah. So he used AI through with the Nokia Bell Labs program to create new ways of beatboxing. And the way he speaks about it is incredible, because he was like, you know, I would never have thought to do some of these combinations with my voice before, but actually using an AI allowed me to expand it in that way. So I think, you know, the thing is, AI is trained on existing data sets and all of that. So I really feel like for the kind of new, unique and innovative stuff to happen, it's really working in collaboration with us to kind of see those interesting things happen.
And do you feel like we do, that this is a very timely time to have not an exhibition, but an event like this? Because I know you didn't come up with this idea overnight. Like, this is something you've been working on, but it seems to be so zeitgeisty right now.
I know. It's funny because people are like, so how long, you know, did it take you coming up with the idea to start the festival? I'm like, oh, like a year and a half. I'm like, no, this is a total lie. I've been thinking about these things for, you know, a long time. In fact, the first exhibition that I worked on to do with artificial intelligence was 7 years ago in Science Gallery. It was called Humans Need Not Apply.
And I loved that one.
Yeah, it was one of my favourites.
It was great show, you know, and like really, you know, imagining a future that we're much closer to now where, you know, creativity is kind of being generated so easily and kind of what will the human role in that be?
But is it something like that you just, you feel like everyone else is on the wavelength that you've been on for over a year and a half or even longer?
Completely, yeah. I think definitely it's, you know, it's great that it's so zeitgeisty and it's great that it's opening up the conversation. I think that, you know, in Ireland especially, there isn't anything existing in this space at the moment. And so that feels really timely for the festival to be happening. And it feels like people are ready for it. You know, I think that there have been things historically, there's been amazing festivals like, you know, Future Humans, amazing, Glitch Festival, even like the Dublin Electronic Arts Festival. Whereas in a way, I think even some of those things were maybe a little bit too soon or a little bit before their time. And actually, we used to hear that a lot in Science Gallery sometimes as well. Whereas this really, you know, thinking about how you can create a program that brings together the different audiences of, you know, general public, you know, artists, researchers, industry, and actually engage with some of these ideas all together and critically feedback on them. It feels like the moment has kind of arrived for that to happen, definitely.
And do you think maybe that sparks a bit of hope maybe for a future for the Science Gallery, which we've mentioned a lot, but is kind of on tenterhooks at the moment? Is it going to go forward? Is it not? We're still not quite clear on that.
Yeah, I think my understanding is it will definitely reopen, or certainly that has been the messaging. And I think it's the Festival of Curiosity who are involved in it, which, I mean, they're brilliant and they're probably best placed in Ireland definitely to do it, you know. I guess the thing with Science Gallery is it was around for 14 years. And in many ways, when it started, STEM and STEAM weren't a part of our vernacular in the way that they are now. So arguably, it achieved the thing that it set out to do. And so I think that probably, you know, obviously the closing was unfortunate, but at the same time, it is a moment for reimagining it and what it needs to do next. Like, you look at contemporary art spaces around Ireland and internationally, and they're programming art and science programs or art and technology programs. So like the appetite for this is much wider now. So maybe it needs to be a different thing. And the other thing with it closing is, you know, other things emerge. I mean, obviously Beta Festival, and I'm very excited about that. But there are other things. Like, there are a lot of really interesting art science programs that are now happening around the country. There are zines starting up. There are collectives starting up. So I think there's kind of a natural cycle to these things. And I'm also trying to be very philosophical about that going into Beta and being like, okay, like, what is my exit strategy? Like, I'm so excited for it to happen, but I'm also like, what is the life cycle of this?
I love that you're already thinking of next year and the year after and all that. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. We want to see Beta come back. And I do think like that's amazing as well. Like, you want people to just engage with these big philosophical questions, because it shouldn't be that, like, say, the purveyors of the technology or the rich people who are paying for the technology get to decide the outcomes of this.
Exactly. And that's, you know, when I talk about access, it's like it's access to the ideas and access to the technology itself. So even through, you know, the exhibition and events, there'll be some virtual reality, there'll be some AI stuff. There's actually this piece by Joanna Walsh called Miscommunication, and it's an AI version of Countess Markovitch, and it's been trained on her letters and first person accounts from when she was alive. So it's absolutely, so you're able to have this first person conversation with Countess Markovitch. It's amazing. So like, through things like that, they're kind of playful and creative. You know, I hope that visitors can come in, they might engage with some of the exhibits or some of the ideas, and on a very surface level, enjoy them and have fun, but then sneakily teach them things. So, like, you know, we have this exhibit by Libby Heaney, this British artist who has created this piece called Ent, and it's one of the first artworks to be created using quantum technology, and it's also about quantum technology. But now, on a very surface level, it's a 360 projection, and it's beautiful. Like, it's just a beautiful immersive experience to go into. So I'm kind of, but then hopefully people will go in, you know, and they might go in to get their Instagrams, their TikToks or whatever it is. And then we can sneakily teach them a little bit about science and technology. So that's always the kind of goal, is like, how can you sneakily teach people?
Yeah. Hi, you suckers, you learn something.
Yeah. And you know, it's taking the technology out of, you know, out of its usual setting of, yeah, where it is maybe only certain people that can access to it, or it's in research labs, or it's in industry, and bringing it out into a public realm where people can engage with it. And or even going into other people's locations. So one of the exhibits is called Potato Internet. I know, it's so perfect for Ireland. But, you know, I don't know if you remember, you know, I think it's in like primary school and you do those experiments where like you use the potatoes to create a little bit of electricity. So Caroline Sinders is an American artist who has created this piece, and it's literally an internet powered by potatoes, but it's also a small scale social media network, which I absolutely love. But it means that immediately in creating a small scale social media network, she's talking with the audience, or she does this workshop to decide, well, how should it be governed? And so what we're doing is we're actually working with one of the local community gardens to do a potato planting and harvesting workshop. Which I love, because it's also, you know, the people that are engaged in the community garden there, they might not come to Beta Festival, they might not, you know, they probably wouldn't come to a tech and digital literacy workshop, but they will go and engage in the workshops that happened in the community garden there. And now then we get to take that, you know, into the community garden and then take it into the exhibition space and showcase this exhibit using the potatoes from Dublin 8, which is pretty cool.
This is very guerrilla public engagement. I love your approach.
Yeah, it is actually. So cool.
So if the security guard never saw Aoife leave the building, how could Mark have committed the crime? And then there's a letter from the confession box. Anyway, sorry for the rambly voice note. But to answer your question, no.
If this sounds like you, then Head Stuff Podcasts competition, Join the Cast, is offering you the chance to record your own podcast series worth €50,000. Simply pitch your idea at jointhecast.ie. T's and C's apply.
Okay, we talked a whole lot.
We did.
At the start of the episode. We're not going to do a big old wrap up.
No.
We did all the thinking at the start and the digesting and the weighing up of the pros and the cons and the
whys and the wherefores. Yeah. But, and like a lot of good art, we did promise that we would raise more questions than answers, and that we did.
We sure did.
We sure did. But Aisling was great.
Yes.
And Beta is so very exciting. So I can't wait for that.
I'm so looking forward to it. So if you're interested, Beta will host talks, workshops, performances, exhibitions exploring topics such as artificial intelligence, quantum technologies, data rights and sustainability, all at the Digital Hub from November 2nd to 5th. And you can find more information and book yourself into some of the events at betafestival.ie. Thank you for listening to this episode of For Tech's Sake. And thank you to Aisling Murray for sharing her expertise with us. You can find out more about Beta at betafestival.ie and find Aisling at @Murray_Aisling on Twitter. Not X, it's called Twitter. And we'll also share some starter links on things we discussed in this episode in the show notes, including footage of Reeps One, the beatboxer we mentioned and whose name we could not remember on the spot.
For Tech's Sake is a co-production from Silicon Republic and the Headstuff Podcast Network. Follow us at Silicon Republic and at For Tech's Sake Pod on your platform of choice. And please subscribe and share and let us know what you think.
Next week, we'll have a bonus episode featuring an extended interview with Aisling and an extended chat between me and Jenny, because there was a lot to cover and talk about here. This is exclusive for Headstuff Plus community members, so do look into signing up. Otherwise, we'll be back to you in a fortnight.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.